talk to the issues. Please, sir.
Thank you very much, honorable members, the chairperson of the portfolio committee, the minister and the DM. I'm going to ask the executive director to give a very short summary of basically all the presentations. And then from there, I'll focus. I'll also give a synopsis of all the challenges that we have. Most of them are very similar to what was presented, you know, by the department. Thank you very much, Kusi.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Minister and the DM. I think I will be short and brief as we've been instructed. Can we apologize for the acronyms? We didn't put them, but we have, when we realized that we made a section to indicate what the abbreviations stand for. With regards to the presentation, it's about the levels of transformation in terms of the forest sector code scorecard with regards to the bigger companies, which we refer them as the MLEs, the QSEs, which is the qualifying small enterprises, and the EMEs, which is our exempted micro enterprises. So these are categorized based on the turnover they make. Next presentation, next slide. When we do the status of transformation, we always assess other issues that may have an influence on the performance, and of course the five elements of the scorecard, and also some of the principles that are in our amended code, like the discounting and so on. Next one. This one basically gives a summary of the other matters that we considered when we were doing the status of transformation in the sector, the happenings during the financial year. Next one. This slide talks to the number of certificates that we received in comparison between the last year and the current year in terms of the qualifying small enterprises, the medium and large enterprises, and the exempted micro enterprises. This slide basically shows the distributions of the certificates received from the different categories or the different subsectors that report in terms of the BBB in the forest sector. This also talks to the distribution of levels in terms of the BE levels achieved across the different subsectors in the sector. The first element that we usually look at is ownership, where we look at the economic interest, which is our dividends, the voting rights, and the net equity points. And we can see the distributions of points in the smaller slide, how companies or how our MLEs have performed. This talks to the analysis or the points that have been received in comparison for the last 2 years, between 2017-18 and 2018-2019. You can see there has been a slight increase in terms of this element. This slide basically says how are the companies that have given the in-depth analysis or in-depth report in terms of voting rights, that is the shareholding. The A's to S is just different companies that have given us the underlying report so that we are able to measure in terms of the points that have been qualified for that element. Then when it comes to the economic interest, that talks to our dividends, the performance is almost the same, where we also analyze the companies that have given the underlying report in terms of that element. This one talks to management control, which says how are we employing our black people and also how are we promoting them to the different categories of management. And we can see that this is an element where the industry is performing poorly. Then we can see the performances when compare the previous year and the current year to say, even though there was an increase, it's an insignificant increase or it's an insignificant improvement. Then we further look at how has the industry performed in terms of the management into the executives, the senior management, the board participation, the different categories of senior, mid, and junior management. And when you look at that slide, you can see that the industry is struggling with management control, especially with your executives, that is your big C's. Skills development is how we grow our competences in terms of learnership, apprenticeships, and internships. And this is also an element where the industry has slightly declined when it comes to the current financial year. And you can see the decline in between 2017 and 18 and 2018-19, considering that this is a priority element as well. That basically shows how the industry has performed in terms of the skills expenditure for the black people in terms of skills development. Then the next one talks to the learnerships, apprenticeships, and internships. You can see the distribution in terms of that to say when it comes to that, there are some companies that are performing well, meeting the target, and some that are not meeting the target. Then the skills development requires that an entity must skill and then absorb. We can see the distribution in terms of absorption, and our code is very strict to say if you are the measured entity, you must skill and you must be the one absorbing so that you don't just skill. The next one talks to enterprise and supply development where we are saying we want to create black-owned entities. The sector has always performed well when it comes to this element, even though there has been a slight decline also in performance. Then with regards to preferential procurement, it's basically saying we must buy from our black companies, black women-owned, our QSEs and our black EMEs and our black-owned and black-designated. So that slide basically shows the distribution in terms of buying from those categories. Then when it comes to supplier development, how are we creating our, how are we making sure that our enterprise become part of our supply chain? I think the industry is doing quite well with regards to that element. And the last one talks to enterprise development with regards to creating the black-owned entities. And you can see with regards to the last element, which is our SED, socio-economic development, how are we contributing to uplifting the livelihoods in terms of economic participation of our people? The sector has always met its target, that is spending 1% of their net PET. That's also the analysis of the companies that have given us the underlying reports to say how are they spending, whether they are meeting the target, and you can see the distribution is that most of the companies are achieving the target with regards to that. We've also analyzed SAFCOL in terms of the elements, because SAFCOL is a state-owned, and it only reports on four elements, and we can see that the allocations in terms of points and their performance, they've reached almost all the targets in terms of the scorecard. Then with regards to the QSEs, which is our qualifying small enterprises, we have got the ones that have been enhanced, that is they received a level 1 or level 2, depending on their black ownership profile. If it's 51% and above, the profile is enhanced, but the ones that are not enhanced is the ones that are scored or verified using a scorecard. You can see the difference. We've got more enhanced than unenhanced, and the performance is better with for the enhanced than the unenhanced. And I think that basically analyzes all that. As I've already said, we can move to the slide, next slide. With regards to management control, it's basically more or less the same as the MLEs. Same applies to the QSEs. The performance is the same for the unenhanced QSEs. ESD, the performance is better when compared also. And the SED, which is our socio-economic development, the industry is also doing well even in terms of the QSEs. This one basically shows the EMEs, which is our exempted micro-enterprises, to say we have received an increase in terms of the number of certificates and affidavits in this aspect. There is just not much analysis with regards to this because we just look at the certificates or the affidavits. They are not scored in any of the elements. Then we further look at how the discounting principle to say if you have not met certain targets on the priority elements, how are you performing? We've seen that most of our MLEs are discounted when it comes to enterprise and supplier development. This is just a summary of the levels that have been achieved in the different categories, that is your medium and large enterprises, your qualifying small enterprises, and your exempted micro enterprises. The sector has received the level 6, which is about 72.93. We've seen some improvements with regards to ownership and ESD, which is Enterprise and Supply Development, but the sector is still performing badly when it comes to management control, as I've said. And we can see that we have received more entities that have been discounted. That is, that they've received a lower grading because they have not met the priority elements sub-minimums. We've seen also the submission of certificates, not just only affidavits in terms of QSEs. The enhanced ones have performed well. The unenhanced ones have performed poorly. There has been slight improvement in the QSEs in management control, but it's just not so significant, as I said, and also because of the points that are lower when compared to the medium and large enterprises. Then this slide basically summarizes the performance in terms of the EME, in terms of how many achieved the level 4, how many achieved the level 2, what, and also the black ownership profile compared to the black women ownership profile. With through your permission, Chair, can I request the Chairperson to just summarize on the other matters, which I think the DDG has also touched on?
On other matters, honourable members, we've in the council we realise that now we need better collaboration between the government and council. There are so many issues that come out in council because we're working together with industry as well as communities, and we literally visit communities through our community outreach programs. Then we visit institutions of learning also. And what we've realised is that now government was not coming up to doing what it was supposed to do in terms of our collaboration, even when we indicated problems to them. The one to indicate now recently is the one, the fires in the Western Cape. And it was not the first time that we had fires in the Western Cape. We had fires before in the Western Cape. We formed a committee. We included government inside. Up to this point in time, government has been giving them the merry-go-round instead of fixing up issues. The second one there is in terms of interdepartmental collaboration. Remember, we have water affairs, we have land, and we have forestry inside. Now, when we meet as a council, we'd expect all the departments to be there. But unfortunately, water affairs and land are always absent. So you realize that whatever strategies we try to come up with, they were falling more on deaf than the other sections that would never solve the problem. An issue that perhaps the president said now recently, where he said now the issue of water licensing will be finalized in 90 days, and I think it's not going to work if it's only DEF which will be doing that, because water affairs must also give us a date of exactly how long it will take for them to finalize licenses when companies apply for water licensing. The fulfillment of charter undertakings by government, we have what we call a commitment ratio, where government tells us from the beginning of the year what they'll be doing in terms of transformation. And industry also gives us an undertaking of what they'll do. But unfortunately, in this case, again, government was not coming up to speed. It's just now recently that they've approved what we gave to them. Industry requires ensuring consistent reporting. Okay, disbursement of lease rental monies through a recognized model for departmental projects. The issue that was talked about by the DDG and the DM in terms of lease monies, if we want transformation, that money must be given to the communities involved to ensure that it enhances their transformation process. But if government keeps on keeping that money and they don't give it up to communities, there's no way communities can improve. They have their money. We even gave them a model where we say you can build up a co-op, institute a co-op which will serve all the communities, and build up mills, because it takes them a lot of money to transfer their products to the mills. Why can't you put mills closer to the communities and build co-ops to ensure that indeed the communities in question benefit? Now, the issue of land claims, again, it should be fastened in one way or another. The transfer of recommissioning, you have category B's and C's. Some of them, like it was said already here, they are a fire hazard. They are not being taken care of. industry has been pleading with government, you know, in our own sector, in our own forest sector council, that now let us recommission and recapitalize these forests to ensure that they work. But unfortunately, they've been given the merry-go-round. Up to date, you know, I think there are letters which were written which can be given to the minister to indicate that companies like MTO, etc., have been trying very hard to ensure that indeed they they recapitalize these forests which have been lying fallow for quite some time. Maybe I should stop right there and say I'll summarize that by pointing that. I don't think I should go any further than that, ladies and gentlemen. Now there are others that I can mention. You know, exit areas are also there. The issue of CAFT funding, which was supposed to be assisting in forestry, is not forthcoming. Streamlining of water licenses, finalization of completeness ratio that I talked about, and voluntary nature of TRIP-BE. This one is really a problem, MEC, because we kind of, how do I put it, it's enticement more than having a legal imperative here. Institutions don't comply with transformation dictates because they are forced to. They do that because they want to do that. But then you have the big companies who know very well that they are gaining by having their companies in government land or leased land who comply. The small farmers in terms of forestry would show you the middle finger instead of doing the right thing, because they'll tell you, this farm has been belonging to my father and mother for such a long time. Why should I come and share it with somebody else? We believe transformation is a government agenda. And basically, anyone who's operating the South African space should belong and assist in terms of transformation. And this can only be done if we change the rules in terms of transformation. It shouldn't be a matter of, you know, appealing to somebody to comply. It should be a legal imperative in one or another. I think I should end right there, Chairperson, MEC, and TM.
When I was saying I've forgotten about this. I thought I was going to fisher it. No, it's fine. Minister, you want to comment? Are we going to ask questions before we go to the after everything? Okay. No, it's fine. Can we continue with the presentation?
Chair, we're now moving to fisheries, the challenges in fisheries. There are three fisheries presentations. So the first one's on the overview. The second one is on the FRAP 2021 process. The first one is on fisheries, the general presentation. The second one is on transformation. And the last one's on the legal.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister DM. I'm dealing with the first presentation on the challenges. The presentation consists of, we'll talk about the mandate, the legislation, local partnerships, and then the challenges. On slide three, what we're trying to say there is that the fisheries branch operates both as a branch in the mother department as well as a public entity. And the public entity is the Marine Living Resources Fund. It's a Schedule 3A public entity. It was established in terms of the Marine Living Resources Act, and that fund covers the operational expenses of the fisheries branch. In other words, we generate our own income, cover our operations, whereas the salaries are covered by National Treasury through the mother department, which will be Environment, Forestry and Fisheries. There are six directorates within the fisheries branch. The first one is Aquaculture and Economic Development. And that chief directorate deals with aquaculture growth and development, as well as managing the 12 proclaimed fishing harbors.
The second chief directorate is Fisheries Research and Development, which advises on and promotes the sustainable development of fisheries resources through conducting and supporting research. It also makes the TAC, total allowable catch and total allowable efforts, recommendations on the status of fisheries on an annual basis. Marine Resource Management manages and regulates the commercial and recreational as well as small-scale sectors. MCS, Monitoring, Control and Surveillance, ensures the protection of the fisheries resources through compliance and enforcement efforts. The Fisheries Operations Support is supports the functions and governance of the entity. And then we have effectively a CFO's office, which manages the resources and assets of the entity. As I've mentioned, fisheries is managed under the Marine Living Resources Act. We also have the Aquaculture Development Bill that has not yet been signed into law. And the department is currently consulting with the sector as to whether or not this bill should be revived under the sixth administration. Fisheries, in terms of international agreements, we are the signatory to a number of regional fisheries management organizations, most of which fall under the United Nations and are the international bodies that govern the management of fish and fish species. And you'll see there is a list, I won't go through all of them, to which we are members. And most of those species deal with the management of tuna and tuna-like species on an international stage. We are also signatory to SADC and the BCC, the Benguela Current Commission, where there we are looking really at the management of our transboundary fisheries, particularly hake. Local partnerships, as the fisheries branch, we have partners with a number of bodies, as well as formally recognized industrial bodies or RIBs, and there are industry associations that are recognized in terms of the Act by the Minister that represent all 22 commercial fishing sectors. And there is a list of the various types of entities and bodies and government departments in terms of which we manage fisheries or we have a relationship with. On slide six, the post-establishment. Fisheries has currently a total establishment or approved establishment of 740 permanent posts and 19 posts additional to the establishment. Those 19 posts are the contract posts for the FRAP process. Of the 740 posts, 550 are filled and there are 171 vacancies, and this is 23% vacancy rate. Just to pause there, because this is similar to the forestry branch, where the reason for the vacancies and the fact that these vacancies haven't been filled was that under DAF there was a moratorium on the filling of vacancies since 2016. The reason for that was that DAF had overspent on its cost of employment budget. So the posts were frozen, there was a moratorium, and no posts could be filled. And that's the case for both forestry and fisheries. We haven't been able to fill any posts since 2016. In addition to that, 93 posts were abolished prior to April 2019. So if you take into account the abolished posts as well as the vacant posts, we are really struggling. Under DEF, we have identified a number of critical vacant posts that we would want to fill immediately once the transfer process is completed. The Minister has signed off on those, and we've also written to the other departments requesting them at least not to abolish the vacant posts, because that is DAFF's intention at the moment, to abolish the 171 vacant posts. The committee should also note that we are in the process of being transferred to environment with the budget only for the filled posts. The budget for the vacant posts isn't there. So that is going to be a headache for our new department. The next slide is the organogram, so I won't go into that. In terms of the challenges, the number one challenge is the capacity constraints as a result of the unfunded vacant posts. As I've said, the branch has identified in partnership with DAFF the critical vacant posts that we would want to be filled immediately. We've also had discussions or are in discussion with the DPSA and DAFF not to abolish the unfunded vacant posts. We're looking at a redeployment process of redeploying staff that may be not fully utilized. And we also think we could do things smarter, work smarter with less, through things like technology, better use of technology, decentralizing our services, e-permitting, and so on. The second issue constraint or challenge we wish to highlight is that we have the entity, the MLRF, has been experiencing cash flow problems, particularly towards the end of last year. We had severe cash flow problems. We're pleased to report that has improved because our revenue comes in the summer months when people are fishing. So, and then the other strategies there are to develop a revenue strategy, to improve our revenue collection, to review fees and levies, and to look at cost-cutting measures. A big challenge for fisheries in general is poaching and what we call IUU fishing, which is irregular, unreported, illegal, unreported, and, So there we are in the process of developing an integrated compliance strategy with other law enforcement agencies and other components in DAFF. We are going to advertise for the appointment of catch data monitors. We're looking at rebuilding the depleted fish stocks, particularly those under threat. We're looking at co-management initiatives, particularly with the small-scale sector, better use of technologies, I've said. Our fishery control officers currently work 9 to 5. We want to look at instituting shift work to ensure 24/7 coverage. We're conducting workshops with prosecutors and magistrates, and we need to develop fishery management plans for each fishery. Other challenges, we need to institute the FRAC 2021 process, and there we're looking to appoint service providers to oversee the FRAC administration, and there will be independent audits and independent hotline. This time round for FRAC 2021, we're going to have enhanced legal capacity to deal with litigation and appeals. There will be more than one delegated authority so that not just one official makes the decisions on the allocations across all fisheries. We will be completing the allocation of small-scale fishing rights by March in the Eastern Cape and KZN, and October in the Western Cape. Northern Cape has already been completed. And then we're looking at partnerships and support programs for the small-scale fisheries, particularly in partnership with small enterprise development. In terms of the audit opinion, the MLRF received a disclaimed audit opinion for the previous financial year. The areas for the disclaimer were that we had not done a stock count on confiscated products, and we therefore could not attach a value to the stock. Assets weren't accounted for in terms of scrap. Revenue for prior years was accounted for in the wrong period. Non-compliance with GRAP standards and biological assets weren't included in the financial statements. Biological assets, this is a new audit finding, it's a new requirement. In terms of our response to the audit findings, we have started the stock count. We've passed corrective journals to address prior year errors. GRAP training has been provided to the relevant officials. All reconciliations of accounts are taking place. Irregular and wasteful expenditure register has been updated and processes have been introduced to prevent these from recurring. Regular meetings are taking place with the AG and internal audit, and consequence management has been instituted. In terms of the budget, the provisional budget still to be approved by the minister is that the revenue will consist of own revenue that we generate ourselves, the grants that we get from National Treasury for vessel operating costs and the Extended Public Works Program, as well as aquaculture. Those three grants, the vessels, the EPWP and the aquaculture, are ring-fenced grants, can only be used for those purposes. In terms of the expenditure, obviously we can only expend what we get in, and that is a breakdown between the various components of our revenue. And that is that one in terms of the challenges. If I could move on to the next presentation on the transformation. I'm going to start while it's been loaded. I'm going to spend time and go through slides 2 and 3, and then I'll spend time on slides 4 and 11. I'll take you through that, and then the small scale. Won't go through every slide because some of them are articulations of the slide 3. So in terms of background, South Africa has 22 commercial fishing sectors, and in 2005, long-term rights were allocated for the first time ever in South Africa for periods ranging from 8, 10, and 15 years. So in 2000, yes, those that were allocated for 8 years in 2005 expired in 2013 and were reallocated for a further 8-year period. They will expire at the end of this year, 2020, so will form part of Track 20. Rights that expired for that were allocated in 2005 for 10 years, they expired in 2015 and were reallocated for 15 years. They will not form part of FRAP 20. And then there were those 4 sectors that were allocated for 15 years. They expire now at the end of December and will form part of FRAP 20. So if I can move on to slide 3, I'm going to look, slide 3 and slide 4 are dealing with the FRAP 20 sectors. So in terms of the FRAP 20 process, there are 12 fishing sectors that are due for reallocation by the end of December 2021. And those, that slide has a list of the 12 sectors that are due for reallocation. I won't go through them. But just to mention that of the 12, 3 of them, that is hake handline, white mussels, and oysters, there is a submission before the minister for approval to declassify those 3 as commercial. And those 3, the proposal is they will no longer be commercial fisheries, they will be small-scale fisheries. and they will go 100% to small scale. Then just to take you through slide 4 and maybe to pause then just to explain it, because fisheries, unlike forestry, does not have a transformation charter and we don't have transformation codes. So what we've done is we've looked at the transformation profiles in 2005 being the benchmark, because that's the first time rights were allocated for a long period. Okay. Then we look at 2009. The reason we look at 2009 was that in 2009 a performance review was conducted in all the fisheries. The performance review looked at how rights holders were performing in terms of a number of criteria, but transformation was one of the key criteria. And we looked at whether the transformation profile had improved, gone backwards, or remained the same. And then we look at the current status in 2019. So we've got snapshots 2005, 2009, 2020. You'll notice that in 2005, the main transformation indicator was shareholding, black shareholding. And what we've tried to introduce over the years is, in addition to looking at ownership, shareholding, we are looking at black ownership of TAC or TAE. Just to explain, each fishery is either managed in terms of total allowable catch, so the quantum, the amount of fish people are allowed to catch, or it's managed in terms of effort. Effort is the type of number of vessels that are allowed into the fishery, the type of gear that can be used, and the number of fishing days. And what we're trying to present to the portfolio committee is that in addition to looking at shareholder, we actually believe that looking at the indicator of black ownership of quantum or effort is a much better indicator of real transformation in the fishery. And if you, so those on slide 4 are the FRAP 20 fisheries and their transformation profile. And on slide 11 is the transformation profile of those sectors that were allocated in 2015. Okay. So if you compare slide 4 and slide 11, those sectors that are due for allocation 2020. Slide 11 is those sectors that were allocated in 2015. And then if I can take you to the summary, which is on slide 13. What all those previous slides are showing is that black ownership has increased since 2005 across the board. In 2005, the average black shareholding across the commercial fishing sectors, and that is calculated as an average of black shareholding per sector, where black shareholding is defined as the percentage allocation of black holders, black rights holders owning more than 50%. And that in 2005, if you looked at all 22 sectors, was stood at 43%. In 2009, that had increased from 43% to 55%, which was a 12% increase. And the current status is that it has increased from 55% to 75% across the board. So that's a general improvement in transformation. Then if we can move on to small scale, slide 14 just gives you an overview of the intentions of the small scale fisheries policy and what we're intending to do there. I'm not going to spend time on that. We can move on to slide 15. What that is showing is firstly the age profile of the small scale fishers. That on average, the average age is 44 years old, which is fairly old. There's a concern that we do need to focus on youth. And if you look at the gender profile, you will see that it's 62% of small-scale fishers are male. And therefore, there is a concern that we need to increase the representativity of women. Slide 16 looks at the racial profile of the small-scale fishers, where 98% of small-scale fishers come from historically disadvantaged backgrounds, with the majority, the main language being isiXhosa, as most of the small-scale fishers are located in the Eastern Cape. 30% are Afrikaans, speaking, colored community in the Western Cape, and 17% are isiZulu. Slide 17 deals with the educational levels of the small-scale fishers, which basically shows you that the majority of fishers in the four coastal provinces have never completed secondary school. Many people in the Eastern Cape and KZN have not completed primary education, so therefore literacy levels are low. Slide 18 deals with the socioeconomic profile of small-scale fishers. And what that is showing is that the majority of small-scale fishers in each of the four provinces are mainly dependent on fishing for more than 50% of their income. And in addition to that, there's a large dependency on government grants. Without government grants, the sector could not survive. And these two graphs are also showing that 80% of fishers in the small-scale fishing sector are living close to or below the poverty line. And Chairperson, the last slide, on slide 19, just gives you a profile of household supply of electricity and pipe water. That the majority, so in the Northern Cape and Western Cape, there's reasonable access to water and electricity, less so in the other provinces, and that food security is a major issue for these fishers, with at least the quite a sizable number go to bed missing one meal a day. Thank you.
The litigation.
Honourable Chair and Members. I will quickly go through the litigation matters. I head the litigation unit. Since the merging of the departments, we've had 73 matters, pending cases that were transferred from forestry, 45 from fisheries. In terms of the fisheries litigation here, we have currently 45 pending civil litigation matters. These were all matters, as I've indicated, that were instituted prior to DAP being incorporated, or your forestry and fishery branches being incorporated to our department. The 45 matters can be categorized as follows. 17 were review applications to set aside decisions taken by the former Minister of DAP, specifically relating to the FRAP 2015-2016. 28 matters relate to other general litigation such as damages, claims and unfair labor practice matters. All of these, as I've indicated, relate to decisions, actions taken prior to the reconfiguration of the department. Next slide. The portfolio committee specifically requested feedback regarding the Barnabas Fulu matter. This is a pending litigation matter that the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries instituted against Mr. Tulu, his law firm. There was a service level agreement that was being challenged. On the 30th of January 2020, Justice Rogers ordered that agreement be declared invalid. It was reviewed and set aside. Also, there was a settlement agreement that was also declared invalid between DAF and Mr. Pula's law firm. On the 6th of June 2019, the court order that was issued at that time was also rescinded. All the writs of execution and notices of attachment pursuant to that rescinded order was also reviewed and set aside. The court also ordered that Mr. Tulu's firm repay the applicants a sum of more than $20,242,472.90 received pursuant to those invalid writs of execution and notices of attachment that the courts had set aside. The applicants were, that is the department, DAP, were also instructed to undertake a verification of the invoices from BXI and report on the results thereof by 9 April 2020. The report must specify what amount, if any, is due to BXI for services rendered and to tender payment accordingly. Mr. Tulu was joined as a party in his personal capacity as there were claims that there were amounts of money that were paid from the law firm into his personal bank account. Therefore, he was joined in his personal capacity. The report and a rule notice, which is an interim order, was issued calling on Mr. Tulu to show cause by 12 March 2020 why he should not be ordered to pay back that amount indicated above, jointly and severally with the BXI firm themselves. Next slide. Chair, what has happened since is the state attorney has been instructed to appoint a tax consultant who is at the moment verifying the BXI invoices and will report on the results thereof. We're currently awaiting senior counsel's advice on further conduct on this matter prior to the return date as per the rule NISAI by 12 March 2020. Next slide. I'm also dealing, Chair, with the forestry litigation. We are still in the process of analyzing all the cases received from DAF. However, what we can report that is that we have 73 pending matters that relates to that department, of which 58 are pension-related. The remaining matters vary between damages, contractual disputes, wrongful arrest, and allegations of detention by forestry enforcement officers. Further to the above-mentioned litigation, we've also received letters of demand claiming substantial amounts in damages caused by south fires, which allegedly originated from land controlled by DAF, and we've also, there's allegations that it's also Sandpark's land, but it's something that we're still in the process of verifying, Chair. So these are some of the stuff we're still trying to collate. The handover process we're still busy with the litigation team and DAF, Chair. Next slide. That is it, Chair. Thank you.
Any other matters still outstanding? It's done. I'll take hands. Honorable Winkler, one. Honorable Weber, two. Yeah. Honorable Singh, three. One.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for that report as well. I'd like to bring to focus an issue that we have with the current severe decline in the export of West Coast rock lobster in response to the outbreak of coronavirus in China, and the department's agreement to extend the fishing season for the West Coast rock lobster, despite the fact that we know that this is an animal on the endangered species list, and that we can't really measure what the impact is going to be on the stocks of the West Coast rock lobster if we continue to fish in this extended fishing period. What is going to happen to this West Coast rock lobster? And the ability of the species to actually recover, because at the moment it's sitting, I think it's on 1.9% of its original pre-fished stock size. They grow very slowly, and I don't think it's sustainable. So I just question this short-term approach, when in fact we know that many of our fish stocks are highly depleted, and we understand that there are many coastal communities that rely on fishing for their subsistence. But since we understand that there is global pressure on fish stocks and the diminishing numbers, what is the department going to do in terms of creating alternative models for employment using coastal resources, perhaps in marine ecotourism? Because we keep on approaching these crises with a very short-term, I think, approach, as a opposed to looking at what the long-term effects are going to be and how we're going to absorb these communities in the long term into employment opportunities that can't indefinitely rely on dwindling fish stocks. It's not sustainable. And what are we going to do? We must be forward-thinking in our approach as this department. Then with regard to the sharks, I'm not sure if you're aware, but dozens of baby sharks were found dumped on a beach with their heads and their fins cut off. What is the department doing about the illegal poaching of sharks? I'd like to know. I mean, 73 million sharks are slaughtered for their fins every year. This is a global crisis. I think that as a department we have been signatories to agreements to try and stem the poaching and the use of sharks for fins. I mean, it is inhumane. Their fins are cut off and they're dumped in the water where they drown and they suffer horrific deaths. They sink to the bottom of the ocean floor and they can't go anywhere, you know. What are we doing about this? So just related to the sharks, I'd like to ask, how does the department confirm species identification of imported and exported shark products? What volume of shark fins are exported from South Africa, and where do the sharks originate from? Are there any management plans for South African fisheries to ensure their sustainability in general and specifically for sharks? Then, with regard to FRAP, I know that this was an issue. We had engaged with the community on an oversight visit, and the issue of the inclusion of women in FRAP rights, I know some in the department understood it, that they had to, you know, apply their mind to. And I'd like to know how far that process is, you know, with inclusion of women who are breadwinners in their communities and the feeling that they're being excluded for other big corporate fishing interests. So what are we doing about that? And then, sorry, one final point. In terms of the Marine Living Resources Fund budget, I see that almost 67 million is being allocated to administration. Now, I understand that, you know, you need an effective administration and bureaucracy to get the work done, but considering that that hasn't really worked very well for us in the past, why such a huge allocation to this and not perhaps to looking at alternative partnerships for, as I said, marine ecotourism and programs that we can create. So, you know, instead of just responding to crises all the time, actually creating new initiatives, new programs, let's invest money in innovation instead of throwing 70 million into administration. Can we maybe just put our minds to that?
And then one final thing. Biological assets.
That is the final one.
Yes, this is under that. This was under the audit. Okay, biological assets were not included in the financial statement. What does this mean exactly when you say this? And if we are reducing our resources, our living resources, to a monetary value, right, then we need to look at this holistically. So what is the actual economic impact of these initiatives? We can't just nitpick and say, okay, this is the monetary value here. What, overall, holistically, what is the economic impact of us not implementing the correct conservation mechanisms of our marine life? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I also have a question about West Coast rock lobster. In 2018, there was a ruling by the High Court, and DEF undertook to actually appeal. I would like to know if DEF did appeal this court case. And then secondly, how is the total allocated catch allocated to rock lobster? Then in 2016, the minister signed off on specific recommendations that says that the tax document for the line fishery contains specific recommendations to disallow catches of sighted listed shark species and to introduce slot limits for commonly caught sharks. My question here is, we don't see this anywhere implemented. Is it implemented, and if not, why and when will it be implemented? My second last question is, how is sustainability measured and considered in the rollout of the small-scale fisheries in terms of shark catches? And then the National Plan of Action for the Management of Sharks has been adopted in 2013. How far has it been implemented? Thank you, Chair.
Chair President, thank you very much. May I just say that I'm sorry, I'll ask my question and have to leave. But I'll read PMG or the minutes for the responses if there are any. They're sending me messages. I'm going to leave the sharks to our rugby team. They're playing very, very well, so I'm not going to ask any shark questions. but the one question, Minister and Deputy Minister, I think you'll have to keep a very close eye on the Marine Living Resources Fund and the mitigation measures that have been suggested here. We just hope that when this year's audit comes through, audit findings, we don't have a repeat of what's there. So that's just one comment. Then I noticed from the presenter, I'm sorry I didn't catch the name of the presenter, and I can't even see the presenter. Thank you. So, oh, they're all sued. Okay, I hope they don't get sued by the lawyer in the back. I see they want to advertise vacant posts by March 2020. I don't know if it's a wise thing to do, because in view of the complete restructuring, reorganization, rethinking by the political functionaries, I mean, is it wise to advertise in March or wait till you come up with how you're going to integrate this branch into the entire department and then look at those aspects? Otherwise, you may find that you might have legal implication of advertising and getting people to apply, and then you can't appoint because you don't have the funds. So that's just one comment. The other, the second last one is a question of fronting, the phenomenon of fronting in transformation. I read somewhere, and I want to know, to what extent have you picked this up? Because it's nice to see good figures, but to what extent is there fronting? And then lastly, I would take it that small scale, when you refer to small scale fisheries, you also include recreational and subsistence fishermen in that category. Or is there a special category for subsistence fishermen and recreational fishermen? Thank you.
I think that's all for now, Honourable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the members. So let's start with the West Coast rock lobster. Colleagues will be aware that every year we set a total allowable catch. So that total allowable catch is not going to change. whether you catch them before March or you catch them before July, the quantity that can be taken out of the sea is the same. So the fact that you are extending the season does not mean that you're extending the quantity that can be taken out of the sea. And we've also said very clearly, and all fishermen are in agreement, that once 10% of females go into berry, which basically means that they're starting to reproduce, then you immediately stop fishing. So if you find that that happens further, I mean sooner than the cutoff and the deadline, then the fishery will be immediately closed. And this is something that I think fishermen are very aware of, they would be the first ones to be saying you have to close the fishery because the females have come into berry earlier. We did not appeal that ruling by the High Court. We have abided by that decision. I would want to suggest that we respond in writing on all the questions on shocks, because there's a lot of detail here. We will give you a written response to all of those issues. With regard to the question of women and FRAP, obviously FRAP 2021, the rules of the game are still to be published. But if you are talking about small scale, and I think from the way in which Honourable Winkler was speaking, she may well have been talking about small scale, not the commercial rights, you would be aware that in the Western Cape we have conducted an audit on the existing small scale registration process, because there's been widespread dissatisfaction around that and a lot of allegations that the rules were not complied with. So that audit, one of the issues that the audit looks at is the question of gender. So that audit is still in the process of being finalized, and we would then in due course be able to let you know whether that audit picked up irregularities with regard to the allocation of rights specifically to women in the Western Cape. With regard to the Marine Living Resources Fund and the allocation on administration, obviously colleagues would understand that if you are running a fishing licensing operation, which is what we are running, a fishing licensing operation, you have to have people, first of all, to issue the licenses, and you have to have people to check compliance. And we have 3,000 kilometers of coast, and in my view, that 67 million is not nearly enough to be adequately running that operation. I would actually argue that we are cutting our cloth cutting our suit according to our cloth. That's the only cloth that we have. But if you have to visit these offices, which are all over the coast, and I've visited a lot of them, they are definitely under-resourced to perform their functions. On the question of biological assets, Sue, you will explain what is a biological asset. I'm sure that we're not trying to be the Auditor General here, so we're not trying to decide for the Auditor General what he determines. I'm sure Honourable Winkler can have that discussion with the Auditor General himself or herself. With regard to Honourable Singh's question, so we have to fill the DDG fisheries, we have to fill the CFO function. You can't be running a Marine Living Resources Fund and you don't have a CFO. I mean, this is a trading account. You have to have a CFO. You can't be running FRAP 2021 without a DDG to head up this branch. So those posts which we have authorized for advertising are funded, and it's a matter of extreme urgency that we fill them, because it's to do with the probity of the FRAP 2021 process. We agree with Honourable Singh that fronting is an ongoing problem. That is why you will see in the presentation that we run a whole lot of activities to educate people about fronting, to explain to them why it's wrong, and obviously when we discover it, we take action. Now, there was an important point that was raised about the fact that fishing is, that fish stocks are limited, and that the number of people who would like to benefit from fishing licenses is ever increasing, and that part of the reason why it's ever increasing is because for many people it's the only form of income generation that they know and that they are aware of. And that is why we have something called the Oceans Pakisa, which is intended to develop an industry around the fact that we have got 3,000 kilometers of coast. And there are seven sectors that we are looking at under the Oceans Pakisa, and it doesn't fall under fisheries. Fisheries is responsible for running fishing licenses. But the Oceans Pakisa falls under the Oceans and Coasts branch, and we are in the process of developing the Oceans Pakisa Master Plan. The deadline we've been given by the Presidency is the 31st of March, and my suggestion is in a future term, in a future quarter, we could present that, and then you can see what else are we doing to proactively develop other forms of income and economic activity in relation to our oceans and coasts that is not based on fishing. Yes, there's a difference between recreational, the subsistence licenses are the small scale, and recreation is a different category. So can you just deal with this question of,
Thank you, Chairperson Minister. This was a very technical finding by the AG in the previous financial year, and what it referred to was not wild capture fisheries or the fish in the sea. It was a working for fisheries project that we had in Hamburg where they were growing sea urchins. And the Auditor General's finding was because that project fell under us, we did not count the sea urchins in the tank as an asset. It should have been on our asset register, and we should have attached a financial value to those fish. We fought a lot about it, but in the end it was a finding. So it's a very specific thing, but going forward, and it has implications for us because we also in our Sea Point Aquarium, we have experimental fish in tanks that in future we're going to have to account for on our asset register and attach a nominal value or some value to those fish. It's a new graph finding, it's a technical issue.
That concludes questions and responses. Okay. Can I get that?
Sorry, Chair, that I'm so persistent. I had two questions. One about the minister that signed off those recommendations, why in 2016, and if it has been implemented or not. And then the other one, I don't know if the minister meant you will answer that question.
We said everything to do with shark.
Okay.
We are going to respond to you in writing because there's a lot of technical detail here. Okay, everything to do with sharks, we will send to you.
Okay. So it looks like we are ending with that, with the sharks.
And they're quite a lot in fisheries.
Otherwise, thank you very much, Honorable Minister, Deputy Minister, and your team. I'm saying that on behalf of the members of the committee. I think we are different from when we started. And rest assured, our questions are going to be of quality now, from now on, when we talk about forestry, because it is very close to our communities out there. when you talk about fisheries, you can see that beyond the land where we expect food, the sea itself is a source of food. I can see the concerns of saying let's conserve, but that's where we eat. So I'm sure next time and from now on, we'll be busy trying to understand more what we are supposed to deal with. Otherwise, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.